Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Okay, so Drew Manning got fat on purpose. Then he got fit. He was fit before he got fat. And now he's going to get fat again on purpose at 40 years old. He's doing this so that he can help people better to get healthy, because if he understands where they're coming from, it's easier to coach people. He wants to be in the average American's shoes. It's a fascinating thing. He's got a book called Fit to Fat to Fit. He's now doing one, Fit to Fat to 40, because he's turning 40. He's just a fascinating guy. And so this is one of the fun episodes that I've done recently. I really want you to enjoy this one. So without any further ado, we were talking to him about living in Salt Lake City, Utah. I love the West. I grew up in Arizona, and so the big skies and the mountains everywhere. And my wife and I went to Salt Lake a couple times recently, but we were there a couple of years ago, and just, I don't know, just something about the Wasatch Range right there. It's just unbelievable. The relief from the city, it's like, whoa, it's just right there in your face. So it's,
yeah,
pretty cool.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, the mountains are so close, you know, it's so accessible. You don't have to drive too far to access them, you know?
Yeah. Do you ever go to, do you ever hike on Antelope Island there?
I haven't yet. I know where it's at. Like, I can almost see it from my house, but the only problem sometimes that I've heard is it can be, there's a lot of bugs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We did a short hike there, and I kind of noticed that. So, well, Drew Manning is joining us on the Disruption Zone. I've been excited about this podcast because those of you who've listened to me for a long time know that about 5 years ago, I was hospitalized with acute high blood pressure that the doctors at the time told me I was going to live with for the rest of my life, and that I was doomed, and it was just part of my genetics, and to go on the heart healthy diet, which made my situation worse. So I was kind of seeking and searching. I came across our mutual friend, L. Russ, and Mark Sisson at the Primal Blueprint, and that's what got me started on the keto and the paleo, which essentially proved our doctors completely wrong. So, and I know that you are super interested in health and people getting healthy. And your story is one of the most fascinating I've heard in the keto world, because you have a website. It's called fittofattofit.com. You have a book by the same name. Is that right?
Yes. Correct.
Yeah. And explain to people what you did, because you got fit, then you got fat, then you got fit again, and now my understanding is you're about to get fat again so you can get fit again. So explain to people what the story is behind that.
Yeah, let's start back in the beginning of this whole story. Back in 2011 is when I first had the idea of doing Fit to Fat to Fit. And the reason that came about was because, you know, my entire life I've been in shape. I grew up in a family of 11 brothers and sisters. We all played sports. I played football and wrestling from a very young age. And so I've never once experienced what it was like to be overweight. And so in 2009, I became certified as a trainer. And here I was, a typical trainer who had never been overweight a day in their life, trying to help people who had been overweight the majority of their life. And there was an obvious disconnect. And I couldn't understand why it was so hard for my clients just to follow the meal plans and do the workouts and stay consistent. Like, they would keep, you know, messing up, if you will, quote unquote, messing up, and, like, you know, giving in to unhealthy food or not doing the workout they were supposed to. And I'm like, why is it so hard? Like, it's so simple in my mind. Like, why can't you just do it? And I remember one of my clients, who was my brother-in-law at the time, told me, you know, Drew, you don't understand how hard it is for me or people like me, because for you, it's been easy your entire life. And so for me, I took that to heart, and I was like, man, maybe he's right. And, you know, maybe I need to learn something as the trainer. And so I was like, well, what can I do? And this idea just popped up in my head. What if, as crazy as it sounds, got fat on purpose? Like, you know, what if that gave me a better understanding? And so, you know, it was something risky. It was for sure. It was definitely unhealthy, but It was something I was willing to do to hopefully gain a new perspective. And to make a long story short, and I gained 75 pounds of pure fat on purpose in 6 months as I documented this whole journey back in 2011. The story went viral. You know, I went on TV shows like Dr. Oz and Good Morning America, and fortunately I was able to lose the weight, but gained a whole new perspective, and it was truly humbled. And it really helped me to develop empathy for those that struggle with weight loss and transformation, because, you know, I'll admit I was wrong in my approach. Like, my approach to helping people was skewed and was not empathetic at all. And so I did this back in 2011, 2012. Like I said, it went viral. Had two seasons of my own TV show called Fit to Fat to Fit, where we put other trainers through this process to hopefully gain empathy and understanding. And fast forward to today, I actually turned 40 this year, December 27th of 2020. And so I've decided to embark on this journey yet again as a 40-year-old for two main reasons. One, I mentioned the word empathy. For me, over the past 9 or 10 years, I've done my own, you know, personal development, self-discovery work. And I feel like my message this time is so much clearer of what I want to get across this time. It's not so much about me learning new lessons, but it's about me spreading the message of the importance of empathy, especially in the fitness industry, for those that struggle with transformation and weight loss, because I feel like society puts so much judgment on them and labels them as lazy or less than because of their body image. When in reality, it's not so much about our body image that's the issue. It's our, when our body image becomes our self image.
Right.
And so that's the main reason. The second reason is I am turning 40, and we, as we all know, our hormones do change and metabolism can change. And so I want to tap into that demographic and say, hey, I'm here with you. Let's do this together. It's going to be hard, but it's going to be worth it. And we're going to operate out of a place of self-love this time instead of self-hate. And so that's kind of the story in a nutshell of why I did it the first time and right. why I'm deciding to do it again.
So I'm fascinated by this. I've always been a student of leadership. And if you look at my library in my house, I have all kinds of biographies of important and powerful people throughout the last, you know, 150, 200, and 250 years, just phenomenal people that did amazing things. And one of the things that is like sort of a thread that runs through good leadership, the kind of leader people will run through a wall for, is the kind of leader who does what he asks or she asks those, you know, that are following them to do him, themselves. So I think what you've done is on like on that sort of this macro scale, you've sort of instituted that. I mean, it's like, look, until you know what it is the people that you're leading are going through, you can't effectively lead them. So if you have a message, I think to me, what you're doing is very powerful because it's an element of sacrifice. You know, my dad was a builder and he's a pastor and he's done all these things and I've watched him lead throughout his life. And one of the things he told me when I was a kid, he managed this big construction company and he would always go and do the work that his employees did. And he told me, he was like, unless I'm seen laying these bricks, unless I'm seen putting up these 2x4s, unless I'm seen unloading this truck, these guys won't respect what I tell them to do. And he always had a good team that got things done fast because they respected the fact that he walked in their shoes. And in a fitness way and in a health way, that's exactly what you're doing, Drew. I mean, You know, we've all been with trainers that's like, yeah, you're right. You got the genetics. The best I can do is maybe lose 20 yeah. pounds versus somebody who can say, nope, I've been there. And let me show you how to walk back on this.
Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out. And I totally agree. And one of the analogies I use is, you know, so many times we see, you know, these fitness influencers on Instagram or trainers like I used to be, who are on top of this mountain of fitness, and the people that are trying to get there who think that is like the ultimate goal of becoming healthy, even though we can talk about that and how that's not exactly true in my opinion,
right.
but they want to get to the top. And so when you're yelling at the top, hear, you know, exactly what to do and say, hey, keep pushing, no excuses, push harder. It's not that hard. It's, you know, the path looks so clear from the top.
Yeah.
But then coming down to the bottom, I feel like makes me so much more relatable. And this is what people would tell me when I did it the first time around, is it made me more relatable versus your average yeah. trainer with six pack abs saying, here's what to do. You know, it's not that hard. Just push yourself. And I think that's the relatability factor of what I did. And, you know, there's a quote that I live by, and it's a Eisenhower quote, I think. It's, and no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care. So you you could have all the science knowledge in the world of how to transform someone's body. You could have all the knowledge of exercise and diet and nutrition and supplements. All of that is important for transformation, yes, but people really don't care unless they feel understood, unless they feel like someone takes the time to understand their situation first. Because when you come from a place of judgment and labeling and belittling and criticizing people, it brings up their walls and creates a separation and division. I feel like empathy is something that could help bridge that gap. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do with my Fit to Fat to 40 journey this time around, because my message is so much clearer. The first time I did it, you know, I was young. I didn't really know who I was. I didn't know what my message was. And I feel like this time around, I have a bigger opportunity to make more of an impact, because in 2011, social media wasn't what it is today.
Right.
And my ability to reach more people and make more of an impact and really drive this force for change in the fitness industry is really what I'm trying to do.
I think you're going to do it. You were talking about running up the hill, and it kind of sparked a thing that a memory for me, because you were talking about, you know, saying, you know, at the top of the hill saying, come on up. I remember when I was playing basketball in high school, and this may have been subconsciously what sparked my interest in leadership, because I remember noticing it. So we had this hill called Devil's Hill, and it was out in the desert, and our coach had a dump truck bring in a load of sand for the first like 100 yards of it and dump it up the side of it. So you had to run up this steep bill of sand, and there was a time limit, and it was like you couldn't start for the team unless you got to the top in a certain amount of time, and you couldn't play on the team unless you got in another certain time. And I remember, like, a lot of us had a lot of trouble. We struggled on this hill, and the coach, one of our assistant coaches, would kind of yell at us from the bottom of the hill. And then one day we show up, and he runs up the hill first and then starts saying, hey, guys, come on, let's go. And everybody made it that day. Whereas on a normal day, maybe half the team would make it. When somebody's yelling at you from behind, it's a lot different than when somebody is yelling back at you saying, I just did this, so can you, you know? So let's go back to the first time you did this. And first of all, tell me how you got fat. What did you eat? Yeah. What did you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the rules were I couldn't exercise for 6 months. So this wasn't like a bodybuilder bulking phase, you know, lifting heavy weight and eating a ton of calories. There was literally no exercise. So very sedentary. And what I wanted to do this time around is, we've all seen Supersize Me by Morgan Spurlock.
Yep.
I wanted to focus on everyday American foods that 80% of the population eats, because these foods are convenient. They taste really, really good. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'll tell you the foods that I just absolutely loved. And then they're super cheap and affordable. They're more affordable or cheaper than real food, which is backwards, right? We have it backwards, right? And so this was, you know, highly processed foods like sugary cereals that, you know, we saw commercials of growing up in the 70s and 80s as kids of like, hey, this is a complete American breakfast, where you see a bowl of cereal, a glass of juice, and a piece of toast, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And so, you know, Cinnamon Toast Crunch was my jam. Like, I would eat that like twice a day. It was so good. Sugary sodas, juices, granola bars, chips, cookies, crackers, white bread, white pasta, mac and cheese, top ramen, Hot Pockets, SpaghettiOs, you know, all these foods that, you know, most people in the health and fitness industry are like, oh yeah, that food, like, we don't touch that stuff. But like I said, 80% of the population is addicted to these foods. They eat these foods because it's so cheap and convenient. And it was amazing how many people reached out to me when I would eat these foods and see me on YouTube. They'd be like, dude, you eat exactly how I eat. Like, that's exactly the food that I'm eating. And sometimes this food is marketed to us as healthy.
It's healthy.
You know, it'll be like, you know, fortified with vitamin A and vitamin D, and we use whole grains, and it's low fat, and it's all natural. And so we're like, oh, this is pretty healthy for us. And so those are the foods that I ate, which, you know, obviously I ate in a caloric surplus. But those foods are so easy to overconsume.
Right.
They really are.
Yeah,
like, I could eat a whole bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch and then an hour or two later be absolutely starving, you know?
Yeah. That is very fascinating to me. I noticed when I first started kind of on this road, like, You know, I there was a time when I would eat like a Reese cup and a glass of milk as my bedtime snack yeah. every night. And I couldn't figure out why I couldn't lose weight.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you ate a Reese cup and a glass of milk. But, you know, going back to kind of my own personal story, everything you say just resonates with me because I remember being told to get on the heart healthy diet. And I got on the heart healthy diet and it was not healthy at all. It didn't do anything to fix the problem. My father is diabetic now, and we've just gone through a big thing with that. And, you know, he's now transitioning to this keto way of eating because he doesn't want to go through what he just went through again. And they put him on the low-carb diet at the hospital. I'll never forget this. This was just a few months ago. They put him on the low-carb diet, and my sister calls me, and she's like, "Do you know what the low-carb diet is?" I said, "What is it?" She goes, 60 carbs. And I started to think, oh, that's okay. That's 60 carbs a day. A meal.
A meal.
A meal. Yeah. And you know what? Sadly, that is low-carb for the average person. Yeah. But they were feeding him muffins and oatmeal in the hospital for diabetes. You know, and I'm just like, what the hell is wrong with our healthcare system and our nutrition system when they're telling us this stuff? You know, it just, it drives me up the wall. So you basically ate what everybody eats and thinks is nutritious food. And you got fat. How much did you gain? How much did you go from to what? Like, how much were you? How much did you gain in 6 months? No exercise, standard American diet.
So I started at 193 pounds, 8.5% body fat, up to 269 pounds.
Holy crap. In 6 months. Dude, okay, how tall are you, Drew?
6'1".
Okay, you and I'm like maybe 6'1.5", 6'2", if I stand up straight. Yeah. I weigh right at 180. I bounce between 185, 195 when I'm fit.
Yep.
Dude, you gained half of a U in 6 months.
I know.
Were you gorging? Were you like trying? I mean, I know you were doing a caloric overeat, but how much did you have to actually eat to do a caloric overeat?
Yeah, and this is where I would have wish I would have tracked every little detail. But if I had to guess, I was probably consuming 4,000 to 5,000 calories a day.
Okay.
But not gorging myself every meal. Because once a week, I would do an entertainment food challenge video, right? Like once a week where people could watch me, you know, attempt a food challenge, right?
Right.
But 95% of the time is I would eat when I was hungry and I would eat till I was full. And then I would repeat that process, you know, 4, 5, 6 times a day throughout the day. But like I said, these foods are so easy to overconsume. Like it's not like you eat a donut and you know, a Twinkie and then you're full for the rest of the day. You get this huge spike in blood sugar, right? Which makes you feel great for a minute.
Right.
And then you get a huge crash afterwards where that's where you feel miserable. And the only thing to fix that is to eat more of that sugary food. And that's the vicious cycle that people get stuck in. When I would give them a meal plan, I'd be like, all right, here, start eating real food. You know, it's not as easy as we think it is. Like, oh, just put down the junk food,
right?
And then all of a sudden you'll feel good. Then like that day, it's like it takes time for your body to adjust. I remember after eating this way for 6 months,
right,
that those first 2 weeks back to eating healthy again were absolutely miserable. Like I and here I am, a proponent of health, a personal trainer, telling people how good it feels to eat healthy, and I felt like crap. Like the headaches. The moodiness I would have, like the grumpiness, and the, you know, I would feel starving. The food did not taste nearly as good.
Right.
And then that's where it clicked for me. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what my clients have been trying to tell me when I would give them a meal plan and say, hey, here, eat real food and you'll feel good. I felt miserable for about 2 weeks because my body fought back against
me.
Right. Because it wanted the high from those foods. And that was really eye-opening for me because the emotional connection to food is way more powerful than we think.
Yeah.
And it took me going through this to finally recognize that and be more empathetic towards those that struggle instead of saying, look, just have more willpower, just have more discipline, like just try harder. Like you wouldn't go up to a drug addict and be like, dude, what's wrong with you? Stop doing drugs. It's not that hard. Like,
right.
Just stop doing it, right?
Like, just you know, choose not to. Right.
So like, of course, people want to stop it, but it's the emotional connection to food is really powerful. And that's what is eye-opening for me.
Yeah. Yeah, this is powerful stuff. I know that when I first switched over, you know, I've had people make fun of me all along. You know, they'll be like, man, you limit, how can you eat to such a limited diet? And I'm like, you don't understand. I actually have a much broader diet. I didn't realize how limited my diet was, because it was, there were certain things, just like a mouse that comes back and taps that button so they get that drug, you know, on the in the drug test. I would just come back and back and back and back to the well. I was eating the same thing. And and it was like my taste buds opened up, but it took a while. Like you said, it was 2 to 3 weeks. You have they call it the keto flu or whatever, and you know, you kind of go through that. It's really a struggle for 2 or 3 weeks, but I've always told people, I'm like, just get through that third week. And when you start to break through, you're like, holy crap, that's what a tomato is supposed to taste like. Like, cause now, cause you know what I'm talking about? Like these genetically modified plastic tomatoes they sell in the produce aisle versus when you go to a store that is able to get a hold of a local tomato that's grown by a local farmer, you can literally taste the difference. But I've sat with family members who aren't on the diet, and they're like, I don't see the difference. They taste the same. And I'm like, no, they taste – this one is so robust, the other tastes like plastic. That's – so in terms of when you're fit, like right now before you start this experiment – you haven't started it yet, right?
No. Okay. August 27th. August 27th is the start date.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So right now – you're on your normal fit diet. What is a day in the life of Drew Manning like?
Yeah. So right now I'm more of a, I would say, cyclical keto, type of person. Yes. I love the ketogenic diet, not because I lose weight on it or lose fat on it. For me, it's easier to maintain my physique, and I feel better not eating, you know, more than 100 grams of carbs a day. Like that, my brain feels sharp. My digestion is better. I don't need to eat 5-6 meals a day. I can eat once or twice. And so, you know, generally I'll have some type of, you know, fat coffee in the morning, with some MCT oil, maybe a little bit of protein powder, which is what I'm doing now. And then from there, I'll fast until lunchtime. Lunchtime is, you know, some type of, you know, fattier cut of meat with a ton of vegetables. And usually I'll saute my vegetables in bone broth. And then repeat that similar meal for dinner time. Limited snacking, like, you know, right now I'm not trying to be too strict, where I'm trying to lean down, but I'm just, you know, maintaining about 8 to 10% body fat. For me, it's, you know, that's kind of my day to day thing, is skip breakfast for the most part.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll do straight black coffee. And then once a quarter or once every 6 months, I'll do an extended fast, 2-3, you know, the most I've ever done is 7 days. Yeah. But I generally feel 3 to 4 days is like my sweet spot. 7 days was kind of tough for me, to be honest with you.
So you kind of do the intermittent fasting with like the eating window. So your eating window is what, like 8 hours, 16-8? Is that kind of how you?
Yeah, 16-8. You know, for the most part.
But you allow yourself a little fat and coffee and don't consider that breaking.
Yeah, I can
fast.
Get away with it, especially with my workouts that I'm doing. You know, just for the mental. Improvement in cognitive function and mental clarity. Like that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
But you know, I have two daughters that are 9 and 11, and you know, sometimes on the weekends we'll get pancakes, we'll make waffles. And like, I'm not about being strict all the time.
Because... Well, I think if you are, I that's the thing too, is I tell people that too. I'm, you know, if you go 7 days and you're like really on point, and then you just have a day where you go have a cheeseburger, you know, there's a release valve in that. You know what I mean? It's like it's a release valve. Like you're like, I'm still a normal person. I can still enjoy what everybody else does.
Exactly. And that's kind of where it's more of like a cyclical keto approach right now. And that's what I teach people in my book, Complete Keto.
Right.
You know, there is the strict keto approach. And I think that period is important to get keto adapted. Like
teach your body
how to become efficient at using ketones. And then from there, you can mess around with like targeted keto, adding in carbs pre and post workout, cyclical keto, where maybe on the weekends, that's kind of where you have more of like a paleo carb approach, where you eat lots of fruits and potatoes and sweet potatoes. And that's kind of generally what I do.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while, I'll have like a quote unquote cheat meal, whatever you want to call it. And like, you know, for me, like you said, it's that release valve of like, I do enjoy ice cream or you know, something that's like totally not healthy. It's going to mess up my stomach for sure. But it might be worth it, you know, like when I'm going out somewhere.
Well, I do try to make sure that whatever cheats I do are healthy in their base, meaning if I do a bowl of ice cream, it's going to be organic. You know, it's going to be something that's going to be a little bit on the healthier side, maybe not quite as much. Because what I noticed that the industrial food complex really covers up a lot of really bad crap with a lot of sugar and a lot of salt. And I think that's why we get so addicted to it. Like, I'll give you an example, like something I like to cheat. So Sprouts grocery store has these nacho chips that are made from cassava flour.
Yes, and, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and they have the nacho flavor, right? And you look at the ingredient list, and there's nothing bad in it. They're done in avocado oil, and they taste to me better than Doritos, like better than Doritos. That's like my big cheat. Like, I'll grab a bag of those, and I'll eat the whole damn bag. That's like, but like, it's at its base, it's healthy. You know, it's a little lower glycemic with the cassava flour, the avocado oil. Now, if I were to taste a Dorito out of a bag of Doritos, I'd throw up. I mean, it would just be gross to me, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And that's kind of the goal, I think, for people is to eventually progress towards those types of healthier foods. Like, if you are going to, you know, have a cheat meal, whatever you want to call it, eventually gravitate towards those types of foods instead of always going back to, you know, Doritos and Pringles and the stuff that we know is probably not the healthiest for us. I don't like to label food as good, bad, because then people start labeling themselves as good, bad as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do feel like there are healthier foods with better consequences. If you were to grab those cassava flour chips versus Doritos, that's probably a step in the right direction. And if you can handle that and you're like, look, it still gives me the same, you know, good feelings when I eat that. It still feels like a cheat meal.
Yep.
Then you're moving in the right direction. You know, not everyone's going to jump from A to Z, letting go of junk food and then all of a sudden going fully organic and grass fed. And like, you know, that would be awesome. But most people, it's going to be progression, you know, and that's my hope at least.
This is a really great point. I want to talk about your next project, but before we do, what's your workout routine like?
Good question. So here's the thing. I've gone in phases. So earlier this year in June, I actually accomplished my first 100 mile run in 24 hours.
Cool.
Which, here's the thing. I've never ran a marathon. I've never ran a half marathon. I'm not a runner. Not naturally gifted. So I trained for about 7 months to accomplish this task of running 100 miles.
Wait, you ran 100 miles in a 24 hour period?
Yes, in under 24 hours.
That's insane.
Crazy. So it all stemmed from a book called Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. I highly recommend it for anyone out there who feels like, you know, that they struggle doing hard things. This will definitely push you outside your comfort zone. And so for me, what that looked like was 100 miles. And I was like, you know what? This is one of those things that seems impossible to me for myself personally, because I'm not a runner. Marathons are one of those things that people can train for and do, and a lot of people do it, and it's still hard. But what I wanted to go for was way outside of my self-limiting beliefs of like 100 miles. And so I trained for 7 months, you know, definitely gave up some of my muscle mass to become more efficient at running.
Sure.
And, you know, I trained my body, my mind to be able to accomplish this task. And I did that back in June. So my training before looks like a lot of running, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then, since June till now, I've just been trying to put on some more muscle mass. I feel more like myself a little bit, you know, probably closer to 190, 195, you know, with a little bit more lean muscle mass on me.
Right.
And so I've been eating, like I said, I've been adding protein to my morning coffee. I'll, you know, up my protein to around 180 grams a day versus normally I'm like 120 to 150 grams per day. And so that's kind of what my training looks like. It's 4 to 5 heavy days per week. You know, slow intensity, not trying to, you know, do a lot of supersets. And so that's kind of what my training has looked like recently.
Do you just take those other days completely off, or do you do some kind of light workout, or?
Yeah, being here in Utah, I'm always hiking or biking or something, like an active recovery type of day.
Yeah, I try to break it up, you know, trail runs 2 or 3 days a week, and then some heavy lifting 2 or 3 days a week. And then usually just like one day off completely. All right. So let's talk about the next part of your project. And then, so now we're doing it at 40. I'm 44. I totally get the changes in the body. Although I have to say that going this style of eating and living, I don't know. I feel better than I did when I was 25, or personally.
Yeah. Same here.
But there's a lot of people that are going to start from behind the eight ball at 44. I mean, you just look at Americans. So you're going to try to get there so you can empathize with them. Are you worried at all about what this will do to your health?
Yes, 100%. And that's one thing, you know, I'm so much more self-aware than who I used to be back in 2011. So I am a little bit worried about giving up my health temporarily. But one of the things I've learned over the years is that, you know, I am more than my body, and my body is temporary, kind of like training for the 100 miler. Like, that is not healthy for your body. I don't think it's healthy to train for 100 miles, but, you know, I did it anyways to prove to myself that I could do it. And so I'm kind of going into this with a similar mindset of, look, I know this is unhealthy. I will have a doctor monitor me throughout the journey, every step of the way. Every month we're going to be drawing blood work. We'll be doing comparisons month over month. And then one of the interesting things I wanted to tackle this time around was more of an educational approach. And that is where I'll take 1 month of the weight gain phase, and I'm actually going to kind of go after all the popular fad diets and the pitfalls and mistakes people make when going on these diets. So we're talking about paleo, keto, vegan, vegetarian, because people, I think, sometimes think, hey, I am in this category, therefore I am healthy and I will lose weight. When in reality, there's a lot of mistakes that people make doing these popular diets, and I want to expose those. So during that phase, you'll see me, you know, gaining weight on paleo, gaining weight on keto, by doing all the mistakes and pitfalls that people fall into when going on these popular fad diets. And then on the journey back to fit, I will, you know, readdress those diets and show people how to do them the proper way. And so that's kind of my hope, is to be educational about that and to really show your average American, look, just because you do any of these diets, and I'm, you know, a keto fan for sure, but I see the mistakes people make, eating these diets and thinking, well, I should be healthier. Why am I not healthier? And so that's kind of, you know, part of the journey. And then the other details, it'll be 4 months of gaining weight this time around. So August 27th through December 27th, which is my birthday.
I see and what then, you did there, Drew. I see what you did there. You went all the way through after Christmas so you can have whatever you want Thanksgiving and Christmas. I see what you did there. That was smart.
Well, you want
to very smart.
You want to know the interesting thing, Leland? The first time around I did this, I did not plan it out, right? I started May through November, November 5th of gaining weight. And then I started November 5th on the journey back to fit. And I'm like, why did I start? Why did I do this?
Yeah. Oops.
So this time around, I'm like, no, we're going to go through the holidays. And then come January 4th, that first Monday of 2021, you know, everyone's going to want to, you know, a restart to a new year. 2020 has been probably the hardest year that we can remember in our generation.
Oh, my God. So ready for
this
to be over.
And I feel like everyone wants to release all that energy, all that negative energy, all that negative weight gain. And I'm going to say, look, let's do this together as a team. Let's do this together as a community. I have weight to lose. You know, you have weight to lose. Let's lose it together. But let's also shift our perception of what success looks like in health and fitness. And that's where my hope is, to really bring those tips, tricks, and hacks on the mental and emotional side, as well as the physical side. So yes, there's going to be exercise, and yes, there will be certain diets that I'll be, you know, pushing out there that I'll be doing myself. But really my hope is that people will stay for the mental and emotional tips, tricks, and hacks that I have to offer people, so that their mindset shifts during this whole journey and they're more fulfilled, you know, instead of hating the process of dieting and exercise, because it has such a negative connotation of like starving yourself and beating yourself up in the gym. And like I said, this time it's about operating out of a place of self-love versus self-hate. And so that's kind of the details of my Fit to Fat to 40 journey.
Yeah, I think the best way to transition into like a keto diet is to start out by not doing so much keto, is switching your foods and going ahead and eating as much as you want for a couple of weeks until you get used to the new foods. And then start to pair back to keto. My biggest worry for you, Drew, is that once, speaking of 2020, I'm going to be praying for you real hard, because I'm going to be really worried that if the murder hornets and the chainsaw bears arrive after you've gotten fat, you won't be able to get away from them. That's my biggest worry for you. So now, what will you do as a guy who lives in a beautiful part of the country, who likes to hike and likes to exercise? How will you? I mean, will you hike? Will you do anything like that? Or are you just going to lay around like a slob on the couch for 4 months?
That's a really good question. And I've talked to my girlfriend about this, who's a yoga instructor. And she's like, well, can you go for a hike or can you do yoga? I'm like, look, here's the thing. I would love to. But the whole goal of this is to really tap into your average person that doesn't really do any exercise other than getting up from the bed, going to work or going to the kitchen, maybe a little bit of walking. You know, I have a dog that I'll take for a walk, but the goal is to limit exercise completely.
Yeah.
And here's the thing is mentally, this was the hardest part of my first journey was not being able to exercise because that was my therapy. That was my release. That was my stress reliever. So not being able to have that was really hard because then food replaced that. Food
right.
kind of right. became my therapy, which is way worse and creates such a vicious cycle of becoming therapeutic. But that's why people get stuck is because food, alcohol, whatever substance you want to name can become that distraction,
100%.
Which is an unhealthier distraction compared to exercise.
Yeah.
So that was really hard. But this time around, I still do plan on meditating. I'm more of a meditator now than I used to be in my early 30s. Journaling, gratitude journaling. And I feel like my mindset going into this time around should be hopefully healthier and hopefully shouldn't have as much of an effect on me.
What if your girlfriend falls in love with your dad bod and doesn't want you to go back? Because, you know, there's that survey that says women love dad bods. I mean, you know what I mean? It's
like, yes, that's a good question. I joke around with her or tell people, I'm like, I made her sign a contract before I went did this journey to make sure she could leave me.
Right.
You know,
that's awesome. How will you keep your family? You have two girls. How do you keep them eating healthy while you're doing this? Because they're going to see your girls are going to see daddy eating a Big Mac and they can't have it. How do you do that?
This is what makes this journey this time around so much more interesting. You know, this time around, I'm fortunate enough to have hired a film crew to document this whole journey from a family perspective. And luckily my ex-wife has volunteered to be a part of that. Her awesome. And my girlfriend get along great.
That's great.
And so we've had conversations about what we want to do with our girls to make sure that, you know, this doesn't have a negative effect on them where they will see me gaining weight. They will see me eating this junk food, but at the same time, okay, how do I limit the food that they have and say, hey, daddy's eating this as an experiment, but you can't really have this food. So my goal is to be very open with my communication to them about what this food does to you. And it's not about necessarily weight gain or fat gain. It's about health and why eating this food and not exercising can have a negative effect on your health, which affects who you are. Like it's harder to be happy when your health is suffering. So I will allow them to have some of this food, and that's going to be a struggle for sure to limit how much they have of this food. But my goal is to really make an effort to prepare their food just like I do now, and making sure when they're with me that they're eating healthy foods. But me and my ex, their mom, are really dedicated to communicating with them properly throughout this journey to make sure that, you know, especially with daughters, it's not about weight. It's not about body image.
Right.
It's about being strong. It's about being healthy. And that daddy's doing this as an experiment to help people in the long run. So it's going to be tricky for sure.
Yeah.
And, yeah. For my girlfriend too. Like she doesn't want to gain weight. So it's going to be interesting for her and kind of the whole family dynamics, I think will be very interesting for people to watch and follow throughout the journey.
Well, I can't wait to see it, but I think there's also, cause if you think about most kids grow up in the standard American diet home and their parents are the way they are statically their entire life, your daughters at a very impressionable age are going to watch the negative effects that this food has on you because they have a healthy specimen as a father. They're going to watch him become unhealthy and then return to healthy. So in a way, with kids at that impressionable age, I think you're wise to be careful in how you manage it. But in a way, they're going to remember this the rest of their life. They're going to see in real time what that diet does to the American people in terms of health. So that's going to be pretty powerful for them, I would think.
Yeah, and for sure. And that's the first time around, they were babies, you know, and so they didn't really understand what I was doing. And now this time around, you know, that they are like, my oldest is so cute. She's so concerned about my health. She's like, daddy, I'm worried about your heart. And I want her to come with me to the doctor when we do the test to show her what's happening. One, to make sure that I'm not going to die. Like I don't, you know, if I do get serious health implications, you know, I will pull the plug.
Right.
For
sure.
And that's why I have the doctor monitoring me throughout the journey. But at the same time, to show her that, hey, you know, I am gaining weight, you know, and I am becoming unhealthier, but, you know, I'm not going to die. I'll be okay. This is all temporary. And, you know, I'll eventually get my health back. And it'll be interesting to see both of them see that, both sides of the story of me gaining weight and becoming unhealthy, but then also losing the weight and gaining my health back.
Yeah. Okay, so your book, you've actually got a couple, don't you? You've got, because you've got Complete Keto too.
Yeah, so Fit to Fat to Fit is my first book. That's right. A New York Times bestseller. That's, you know, kind of the in-depth of what I went through my first time around.
Right.
And then my second book, Complete Keto, takes all of those lessons on the mental and emotional side and all those tips, tricks, and hacks that I've kind of briefly talked about in this episode. And it wraps it up into a ketogenic approach to a healthier lifestyle change. So in there, you'll find things like the science behind keto and how keto works. You'll have a 30-day program with detailed meal plans and delicious recipes that are all dairy-free and nut-free. And so it's a whole foods approach to keto. But then on top of that, you'll have homework as, you know, on top of things like exercise and the diet, as far as meditation, positive affirmations, a gratitude list, and other tips, tricks, and hacks to help people, like I said, be more fulfilled on their journey. Mm-hmm. And this is just, you know, one tool in their tool belt, with the ketogenic diet being that tool for people that feel like that's something that could work for them.
Right. And you've also got a website if people want to go to it. It's Fit to Fat to Fit, and it's the numbers two. So it's FIT, yes, the number two, fat, the number two, fit.com. And you've got, like, you can sign up on there for programs that will get you started on this keto journey. You have some supplements on there. You've got programs like Keto for Life, Keto Jumpstart, Complete Keto, Keto School, 6-Month Transformation. All these programs people can access on your website at fittofattofit.com. So you start August 27th. Where will people be able to watch your journey? Will it be real time, or is it going to be released afterwards as like a TV show, or how's that all going to work?
It'll be both. So okay, you'll be able to see a lot of the footage released through social media. There'll be a lot of live streaming certain events. I'll do weekly weigh-ins. I'll have a CGM device monitoring my glucose levels throughout the journey. So it'll be a lot on social media. But then, like I said, the film crew is, we will keep some stuff for possibly a future documentary later on down the road. So, okay, yeah, go to fittofattofit.com or follow me at fittofattofit with a number two. You know, on all my social media handles, and then you'll be able to follow along with the entire journey. It is going to be called Fit to Fat to 40 though. But you know, it's the same website. You'll be able to access it through fittofattofit.com.
Cool. I love this. I love what you're doing, because I think people, I always try to tell people, I'm like, you're never too late. I was 38 when I came to this lifestyle. And I've never looked back, and I never will. I have a lot of cheat days, but there's no temptation. Yeah. Like when I drive past a McDonald's now, it literally makes me sick to my stomach. Like the smell of that grease and that whatever it is they're doing. Well, with the exception of McDonald's French fries, those are the best things that ever hit the earth. But I mean, yeah, any fat, I don't want to pick on McDonald's, any fast food restaurant, you know, when I drive by it, I don't even like the smell anymore. But, you know, there's so I'll never look back in terms of that, but it is a constant effort to keep discipline, because there's so much out there that tastes so good that wants to lull us into this. So I love what you're doing, because what I tell people is it's never too late. You're never too old. You can do this at 70, you know, you can do this, yeah, at 80 and make your life better.
Amen.
The inside of your forearm on your website has a tattoo: vulnerability is strength. Tell me about that.
Wow. Such a powerful saying that I learned from Brené Brown, her books, you know, especially her book Daring Greatly was really opened up my eyes to the culture I grew up in, which was surrounded by guilt and shame. To, you know, try and motivate me to be a better person was, if I guilt myself and beat myself up more, then I won't make any mistakes. And a lot of it had to do with my perception of the religion I grew up in, which was a very strict religion. The culture of sports growing up, you know, like if I missed a tackle or messed up, there was a punishment. And so that kind of carried over into me as a person and thinking, man, I want to be perfect on the outside for other people to look at me and be like, yeah, Drew's got it figured out. He's got no problems. He's disciplined. He's got a great body. But on the inside, I hated who I was because I had no outlet to talk to someone about issues that I was having as a kid, because I couldn't understand why I couldn't just be perfect.
Yeah.
You know, like I told you, when I would get frustrated with my clients who couldn't be perfect, a lot of that had to do with how I viewed myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would beat myself up when I would make a mistake or sin, if you will. And so my methodology was to just hide that from the world you know, and pretend like I didn't have any sins or any mistakes.
Right.
Until eventually, you know, I hit my rock bottom. And for me, my rock bottom was going through a divorce. And after 10 years of marriage, leaving my religion around the same time. And at that moment, when you hit rock bottom, at least for me, I was open, trying to find something that would help me find my purpose again, or find out who I was. Like, because without religion and without your marriage, those are two big factors of your identity,
right? Yeah,
especially for the first 30 years of my life. And not having those anymore, I was like, well, who am I without this? And that's where I started to work with a life coach who helped me see things through a new perspective. And that's where I started to develop self-love despite my mistakes and weaknesses in the past. I was able to let go of that.
Right.
And then reading Brené Brown's books and started studying her books on vulnerability and how that should be viewed as a strength. And once I embraced vulnerability as a strength, I owned my story instead of my story owning me. And those things that brought me shame, once I open up and talk to someone about those shameful things, because a lot of men struggle with shame.
Right.
Once you talk about those things that bring you shame, the less power shame has over you. Because if you keep it inside, that shame owns you. And if any men listening to this can relate to that, I promise you, you know, this will resonate with you. Finding someone to open up to talk about those shameful things that you've hidden from people will eventually free you. And it's scary to get found out. It's scary to tell your story. But like Brené Brown talks about, once you're in the arena, that's where life really happens. And that's where, you know, being an authentic version of yourself, it really is so freeing. Because now being a dad, you know, I don't have to pass that on to my kids of feeling guilty or ashamed about my past. And I can finally break that cycle so that my daughters, you know, can open up and embrace vulnerability as strength and own their stories instead of trying to shame themselves and beat themselves up and hide their weaknesses from society or from me. Because that's what I did for my parents. I was like, I don't want you guys to know my mistakes, so I'm just going to pretend like I don't have any and just pretend like everything's all right.
Yeah.
But that's where a lot of hurt gets passed on from generation to generation, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so a lot of people take their shame into the next household. Are you still I'm fascinated by that. Are you still a person of faith, just no longer religion?
100%. Yeah. Still a person of faith, no longer organized religion.
Right.
Based on the experiences that I had going through what I went through, definitely more spiritual. And that's the thing is, like, I feel like I'm such a better version of myself now because
that's so cool.
Where I can choose to be a good person because it feels good, not because there will be a punishment if I don't and there will be a reward if I do.
Right.
But because it genuinely feels good to be a good human, to be a good dad, to be a good person in this world. Because I choose to be, and it feels good to me, instead of like, all right, if you do this, then you can go here. But if you do this, you're going to go here. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, I grew up in the church, and I'm a Christian. My parents are missionaries, but I wasn't raised in that type of I'll just put it this way. My dad was like, look, we've taught you everything that we believe is right, and it's your job to find out if we're right. And so there was a freedom in it, and there was a trust in it. And so I always wince when I hear about people who have those past problems with religion, because religion is just the construct that man built in order to try to build a bridge between him and God. Faith is when you actually enter into a relationship with him. And there's a world of difference between the two. And it's not that I want to say religion is all bad, because there are people within religions that are quite faithful people. It's just that we've built this man-made construct and we hold rigidly to it because a lot of people within religion haven't taken the time to actually figure out the character of God. And when you do that, the religion sort of falls off. You know what I mean? It just goes, you're like, oh, okay, I get it now. cool. I'm glad I asked that question. So.
Yeah, we could have a whole episode dedicated to just this for sure.
Yeah.
But I hear exactly what you're saying.
I love it. Hey, listen, I don't want to keep you much longer. I really appreciate your time. I'm fascinated by your story. I think what you're doing is awesome. I think it's inspiring. You are shouldering the burden for other people so that you can help other people get through this. And I just want to commend you for that. And once again, tell people that your website is fittofattofit.com. And then tell me one more time where people can watch your journey, follow along with it, because that's what we want people to do.
Yeah, honestly, fitfattofit.com.
Perfect.
Or follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, @fit2fit. whichever, you know, platform you prefer, and it'll be all be on there.
All right, perfect. Drew Manning, have a great day, sir. Good talking to you.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye. Well, I love that guy. What a cool thing. I mean, cool story. I mean, you realize, like, everybody struggles, and I like the stuff that he was saying about body image. You know, it's funny. I gave up a long time on the idea that I'm ever going to look like, you know, a model. It's not going to happen. First of all, I got a face for radio, which is why I do microphone stuff more. But what I want to be is healthy, right? And you have to drop those sort of body image things behind, because only people with certain sets of genetics are ever going to be that, you know, men's health cover model, that kind of thing. But you can look and feel your best and still do that and not be chasing this sort of weird body image so much as you're chasing health and fitness and happiness and feeling good and mobility, you know, and just able. When you're healthy, you can live in the moment. When you're healthy, you can enjoy life. When you're healthy, you can engage with the people in your life. When you're healthy, there is that release to actually live life. And so that's what you should be pursuing. But what this guy is doing, to me, is pretty heroic, because he's actually trying to put himself in the spot where most Americans live to then lead them back. Just like the story I told about the coach, that when he figured out if he went to the top of the hill first and then called us up instead of pushing us from behind, everything changed, right? So anyway, fascinating stuff. Hey, thanks for listening. I appreciate all the downloads of the podcast. It is humbling. You can find us on you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and iHeartRadio's app. Just search The Disruption Zone, and we'll deliver brand new episodes to your pocket. Thanks to my co-host and co-executive producer, Cameron Mills. Thank you to JP Web Design for their help with our website, thedisruptionzone.com. And a big thank you to Dynamics Productions in Lexington, Kentucky, dxaudio.com, for their help with the production on this program. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Leland Show. As of right now, I need like four more to get to 5,300. So somebody help me out. And it's also Zone Disruption on Twitter, and at The Disruption Zone on Instagram, and at Great Lelando. Thanks for listening. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.